From the front line.
It's not going to work, man.
From the tailgate. Representing KGYR and its stakeholders. We are the Forum for the Fans. The Bleed Blue Show. Flying solo, here's your host, Steve.
Yeah, we are Forum for the Fans. The Bleed Blue Show. Big Blue Roundtable Offseason Football Talk. BleedBlueShow.com is our website. Audio archive episodes could be found on iTunes, Podcast Republic, TuneIn, Stitcher, Google Podcasts, Apple Podcasts, Spotify for the millennials. Are heading into a holiday weekend, and I hope everybody is staying safe, and I hope everybody's taking care of themselves, loved ones, so on and so forth. Next week, for the reminder, we got three episodes next week on the baseball, the hockey, exciting news for the hockey, by the way, and of course, the basketball. So we're going to tackle those next week, and it should be a lot of fun. It's been an interesting week for the Bleed Blue Show, because not necessarily because we didn't really have podcasts or episodes this week, but I've been very busy making rounds, talking sports with all kind of platforms, man. First of all, I want to say thank you to Susie Prof, man, Bleeding Yankee Blue. We had a fantastic video episode on Monday. It was not part of the podcast, but it was very fun to do, talking Yankees, talking baseball, talking, you know, Major League Baseball as far as the plan and all that. That was a nice, fun dialogue with the Bronx people on that. That was a good back and forth and interactive. That carried over for almost 2.5 days, man. I want to give a shout out also to the Boxer Cornerhead Show, man. They had me on, and I enjoyed that conversation, man. Talking some boxing on their platform. Got into a lot of the 130 cats, 135, a lot of the stuff that was happening between Mayweather and Errol Spence Jr. as far as who can handle who. We had a lot of fun on the Boxing Corner Show this week, being on there. And, of course, we had the NFC East Roundtable Show. I want to shout out to all those guys doing their shows, man. Shout out to Vic with the Philly Pod, doing Philly sports with Eagles and Sixers. I want to shout out to my guy, Carol, Sports on the Hill Talk. Everything DC sports, and of course, Cat Talk Wednesday with Vinny. He's associated with the Cowboys and mostly with college basketball. We had an excellent, excellent video roundtable show. You can check out that feed. You can go to the Instagram, you can go to the Facebook timeline or their pages, either or, man. We had a great dialogue back and forth with the sports guys. Talking to NFC East, talking crap, being objective of what we like and dislike on each other's teams. And then yesterday, I was a guest on Sports on the Hill. Shout out to Carol, he invited me on. And as far as pretty much getting my take on all the sports, Major League Baseball, basketball, hockey, the whole shebang, man. It's always a great time with Rob and Carol on their platforms, man. But we are here talking football, man. Off-season football, to say the least. So I was thinking, what could we discuss or what was on my mind this week for football? Now, I don't know what the other stakeholders are going to say or what they're going to bring to the table, but my theme I wanted to go tonight, if they wanted to, you know, answer questions for me and they have questions for everybody else, we can answer those questions. I wanted to dive into the defensive coordinators over the history, you know, I'd say the last 40 years, because we got a new defensive coordinator, Patrick Graham. We already know his track as far as last year with the Dolphins, but by way of the New England Patriots before that, even a little stint with the Big Blue. But the thing is, I wanted to ask about Patrick Graham as far as what, you know, things what you want to see different. I'll reiterate that question when we get to that point. Also, you know, the NFL virtual workouts, how is that going to work? What do the stakeholders, what do everybody have to say about that? How they want to see that work out? I don't even understand. In a way, a lot of these players kind of do that before the COVID-19 stuff, kind of with Instagram. They kind of put it on personal workouts. But how is this really going to work with organized team activities, like OTA type of stuff? So we're going to have all that stuff. We're going to bring on the stakeholders, and we're going to have this dialogue, man, fun dialogue. And then I know probably some people may want to touch on the DeAndre Baker. Personally, I kind of try to keep the sports talk on the field and leave it as is. Off the field stuff, I think sometimes fans get too caught up with headlines. They get too caught up with stories, i.e. clickbait, and we really don't know the entire capacity to what happened in these stories. And that's why I kind of do not like to talk about stuff like that. However, in a sense, we kind of have to, in a sense, because of DeAndre Baker, and this ties back to Gettleman, character issues, moving up in the draft, going to get him, his struggles last year, and then all the off-season stuff that happened with him recently. Although I don't necessarily want to dive into that because we really don't know what happened, but I rather look at it from the general manager perspective of how did the fans feel of why, what happened with Gettleman and accountability. Has Gettleman said anything? Because I haven't heard anything. I've been under a rock. Nonetheless, roll call time, stakeholders. We don't have that much time to discuss everything, but we're going to try to deep dive into the defensive coordinator, Patrick Graham, likes, dislikes, how we're going to use this current personnel. Definition of Lit, a Big Blue of Arizona, frontline extraordinaire as well. Lit, say hello to the people. How you doing? And we'll bring on everybody else, and then we'll get the dialogue popping, man. What's going on, man?
Hey, Steve, what's good? What's good?
What's good, man?
Just chilling out here, man. Just kind of ready to do something, and this is kind of like the highlight of the week. Talk to you in a few.
It's the highlight of the week, man. I mean, wait a minute. I mean, you're not binging any shows or nothing, like TV shows or movies? Or...
Dude, I mean, how many times can you watch I mean, the only thing that was pretty much current was the Bulls documentary, but everything else is pretty much we already know the outcome. As far as that, I mean, what, The Masked Singer? I mean, that's about it.
I mean, that probably be a talk for the end of the show, but man, there's some great shows out there. Like Billy.
You have a new message.
But look, we'll get to that. We'll get to the football talk when we get to you, man. I'm not sure if this is Carl or Chris because it's really hard to tell. Who is this? Which one is this? Carl or Chris? Chris or Carl?
This is Carl. Good evening, everybody. How's everybody doing?
Good evening. How you doing, man? Big Blue of Chicago, BigBlueChicago.com. How you doing, man? Everything good?
I'm doing good. You know, thank goodness a week. What a difference a week makes, huh? Because if we would have did this show last Thursday, we would have had a much different tone.
Right, right. Manny Dogs, Blitz_FOG, man. This is a defensive theme show. Glad to have him on. Manny Dogs, Blitz_FOG. What's up, bro? How's everything? Then we're going to lead off with Lit, man.
Yeah, what's poppin', baby?
Yo,
I'm juiced to be here, man. I'm good. I'm good. I'm feeling it. Defense, I love it. Let's rock.
Right, all right. Let's do this, man. I'm gonna lead off with Lit. Lit. I mean, it's a 2-part question, and I have more questions to go around. We'll take it one at a time. Lit. Let's start off with this, man. Patrick Graham, man. Like, what are your thoughts of what you want to see adjusted from James Betcher? And then, if you want to answer this question, I mean, we could go all through the defensive coordinators the last 30, 40 years from, like, I don't know. You could go to Ralph Masiowski, Hawkins, Bill Belichick, Schottenheimer in the 70s, Tim Lewis. Remember John Fox in the early 2000s when he was the defensive coordinator before he was the head coach at the Carolina Panthers, Perry Few, Bill Sheridan. Do you have a favorite Giants defensive coordinator? And also the question for me, and if you have questions, please feel free to ask, as far as how do you want to see Patrick Graham adjust with this defense, with this personnel, and then and the virtual off-season workouts. How do you think this is going to work out? Is it to our advantage? Who benefits from this as far as the league? Go to Lit, we'll go to Carl, we'll go to Manny, then we'll go back to me. Go ahead, Lit.
Steve, so, hey, we mentioned off on the defensive coordinator. Patrick Graham has a lot of going back to basics to re-implement with the Giants. So we brought on James Betcher. Now, mind you, guys, Carl and Many Dogs, I live out in Arizona. I saw that guy every Sunday, what he did with the Cardinals, which he then tried to bring to the Giants. It did not work. Obviously, we know that. So with Patrick Graham in the forefront, Patrick Graham needs to figure out, okay, I need to find out what his strengths are and what his weaknesses are. I need to curtail my scheme that they will excel in and pretty much run with that. He, again, is going to have a very young nucleus your most senior guy there, your veteran is going to be between James Cradbury, and Jabril Peppers. So with this offseason going virtual, I think he'll be at a handicap instituting his scheme. We don't even know what type of a scheme it is. Is it going to be something from, you know, when he was with Green Bay? Is it something he was with Miami? Or is it going to be something that he learned from Bill Belichick? We don't know. There's so many questions that are unanswerable right now. We've missed a lot of certain camps that we're supposed to be having, mini camp, possibly OTAs. We just don't know. There's just a lot of uncertainties, but he has a huge, huge shoes to fill with the team, his young core, and figuring out an identity, because that's the one thing we have not had, Steve, is an identity. I would like to leave it at that. Now, I also like to ask the entire platform a question. Steve, this goes for you too, Carl and Manny. If you are the ownership, if you are a sponsor of the Giants, if you are a philanthropist of the Giants, if you're a minority owner of the Giants, you all were told that we're going to jettison these players out last year, even though you might not wanted it, but it was felt that it was in the best situation to get rid of all of these character issues. If you were an owner, a philanthropist, a minority owner, a sponsor, or a donor, do you feel bamboozled to some point because of what happened last week with DeAndre Baker?
All right. One more. The other question I have for you, Lit, and then we'll bring that to Carl, and if Carl has questions, then Manny, then we'll get the other stakeholders. The question, defensive coordinator. You have a favorite Giants defensive coordinator of all time? And then we'll go to Carl.
You know, that's a really interesting question, because both Perry Fuel and Spagnuolo had their highlights and their lowlights. So, but if you were to ask me who my favorite one was, probably Spags with Belichick coming in second. Spags just re-energized, came up with something exotic, unique, and just kind of just wowed me with what he was able to do.
I had to write that down. We're going to take a little poll, a soft poll. We're going to put it in for Spagnuolo. Okay, cool. And then we got Lit question. Thanks, Lit. We're going to go right back around. Got more questions, too, man. Definition of Lit, Big Blue of Arizona, man. Carl, Big Blue Chicago, man. You hear the question, your thoughts. Lit says, do you feel bamboozled? And then if you have any questions for Lit or Manny, and we'll get everybody on after that.
You know, yeah, let me answer that question. I think we've come, and when it comes to the NFL now, I think you almost have to come to a point where there is going to be some level of quote unquote off the field activity that you may not want to have plastered in the newspapers or plastered on television or plastered online that you almost have to accept. You know, you go to any team now, and I don't want to say this happens with every team, but I would say more than half, majority. I mean, it's certainly not like there's one team that is, you know, the most squeaky clean in the world. I think what gets tripped up a lot is that there is this sort of idea that, you know, we're going to have a quote-unquote high culture. We're going to have, you know, guys that toe the line, guys that, you know, are on the straight and narrow. When the reality of the NFL over any long period of time suggests that simply isn't accurate. Like, there is going to be dudes that do some really strange stuff. Now, whether you want to keep those dudes or not on your roster, well, then that's up to those, you know, particular teams. Some teams decide, okay, we're going to figure out a way and work with them. Some guys say, or some other teams decide to say, listen, we can't have this at all at any cost, and we just jettison them and send them on their way. So I think if you're an owner, I think if you have some investment in the team, I think you almost have to look at society as a whole, look at those percentages, and just have to believe that that's going to be no different on a football team than it is out in the real world. It just happens that way. As far as the defensive coordinator goes, You know, I don't really have a whole big ask. All I ask for, and this is not, this is only partially onto him and part of a bigger theme that we can talk about as well. I'm just looking for smart play. You know, there is a lot of times that we have seen over these years where, you know, we see the same sort of play. We may see it week after week. We may see it game after game, you know, where we see something that sticks out. Like, for instance, not covering the tight end in the middle of the field. And we're saying, damn, can't they stop this? And then we see it happening over and over and over again. And you wonder, it's like, okay, are they studying this week to week? What is being taught? And unfortunately, this does not just go past any one particular coordinator. Like, this has been a pattern. This has been a theme. So what I'm looking for, hopefully, is just, you know, how can we shorten learning curves? Can we be fundamentally sound? Can we be attention to detail? You may not have the greatest talent in the world, but can talent be made up for with smarts and intelligence? I don't know if we have that on this roster right now, so it'll be a work in progress to see if that is actually the case. So that's the thing. Like, until you give me high-level players, I have not seen a situation in football. Maybe you guys can figure it out and let me know. I have not seen a situation where there has been a team that has had below-average talent that somehow played at more than above-average performance in professional football. I haven't seen it. If you guys can find it, please let me know. And right now we are working in a deficit where we have below-average talent. So for me to blame coordinators or blame coaching staff for making guys not play better than their talent level suggests, I can't get on them for that. But, and let me close with this, and this has been a theme that maybe it's just a football thing. Maybe it's just something that just happens in sports. I've noticed over a period of time where we have had especially with the Giants, a sort of weird fascination with blaming coordinators for teams' performances. Like, I'm thinking about this now. So 2011, there's about a six-game period where the Giants' defense was spectacular. They win the championship, and everything looks great. The next season, the same coordinator, the same defense, basically, plays below average, and we're blaming him for all of the faults. Are we suggesting that the coordinator somehow overnight got stupid? Like, I have a hard time believing this. And I've noticed this pattern over a period of time. Maybe someone can explain it to me, but there has been this sort of weird fascination with consistently blaming the coordinator for the performance. The coordinator answers to a coach. At some point, can we at least blame the head man? Because he approves of all game plans before these games. Someone can please answer it for me. What is the fascination with blaming coordinators for poor performances?
I do have a question for you. I mean, it's actually a follow-up question. And no, let me hold that question because this is the stakeholders' time to talk, man. I'm gonna hold that question, Carl. Carl, you got. We're gonna go back around, but I'm gonna write that question down, and we're gonna come back to you because I got a question to follow up on that question. Manny Dawgs, let's go to you,
okay.
Man. Manny Dawgs, if you have a question after you speak, feel free, and then we'll get everybody else on after that. But Manny Dawgs, the defensive coordinator, do you have a favorite one of all time? What's your thoughts on Patrick Graham, the virtual workouts, defense? What kind of adjustments you want to see from Betcher to Graham, so on and so forth? If you have questions, and we'll go right down the line and bring on other stakeholders after that.
Patrick Graham, I'm excited because – he's going to come in. He's going to do – he runs the same 3-4 I run, except mine is a hybrid. But he runs a nose tackle, and then the two ends, or big D tackles, are head up over the guards. And then he got the outside linebackers more like traditional ends, but they're in the stand-up position. So it looks – like a five-man front. So when you see it, it's outside of the tackles. It kind of looks like a 5-2 is what it kind of looks like. So it'll be interesting to see what he does with that. What kind of personnel we're looking at. Is that going to be Leonard Williams and Dalvin Tomlinson? with Lawrence at the nose tackle? And then who are your outside edges going to be? Is it going to be X-Man and Lo Carter? Are the middle going to be Connolly and that new boy from no, it'll be Connolly and Blake Martinez. So, I mean, it could possibly work. You got to have speed on the edge, though, and those guys over the guards, and those three down linemen have to control the run and control those gaps. So when you play teams like the Redskins and the Cowboys continue to run Zeke the way they do, those three guys got to be studs. So I'm looking forward to seeing what Patrick Graham does. When it comes down to my favorite defensive coordinator is Bill Belichick, it's not even close. The very distant second would be Spags. Mainly because what Belichick did in the 80s carried us through the 90s. We looked at it like a team that tried to mimic that throughout into the 90s when they changed it back to an orthodox 4-3. So that's my favorite defensive coordinator. The question about being an owner, here's the thing. We do live in a world where you know shit happens, I guess, that for lack of a better term, right? But at the end of the day, culture drives everything. You have, and I don't know why people keep saying this one of the things I said to Carl, we have a living example of what that type of culture looks like. And it wins. And that's the Patriots. They don't take shit. They don't take anybody's crap. If you got crazy off-field issues and you don't clean them up, you off the team. I don't care how talented you are. Look at AB. Look at Chad Ochocinco. Randy Moss had an amazing year, and that team's gone. So they don't play those games. The culture will carry the team. And when it talks about underachievers that overachieve, again, look at the Patriots. You can't tell me superstars that they've had. They have some talent, but they work hard, and the culture is do your job. Understand your job. And if you understand your job, it's like what I believe in the learn to teach model. So if you learn your job, then you can teach your job. That's why they have that next man up thing that was so popular for a decade, right, that you heard from the Patriots. They have the way. It's figured out. They got the blueprint. I don't know why people keep trying to reinvent the wheel. The blueprint is there. Since you can remember, the Patriots run the ball well, right, even if it's by committee, and they take guys who are going to buy into their system. They say, hey, you play quarterback here, you can play receiver now. You was a running back, I want you to play a slot guy. Like, they always got guys that are interchangeable. And those kinds of people who are versatile, who can adjust, are consistently good character guys. They're consistently good character guys. So with this whole situation, if you're trying to send a message, you have to send a clear one. And what better one to send than taking your first-round draft pick and getting rid of them or trading them away, doing something so you can get some of that value back. It's whether he's guilty or not, I don't care. At this point, what has he done since his draft night? And I spoke to Chris about this. Chris knows how disgusted I was by that boy's behavior on his draft night. First of all, he come out there, and the first thing you want everybody to see is your jewelry. That's the first thing you want everybody to see. Don't ever piss me off like that. And it's just his attitude, and somebody dropped the ball, because when all this happened, of course, now you get the leaks and people talking about what they heard, and, oh, there was character issues in Georgia, and he wasn't a very good student. He wasn't a very good, you know, you had to really force him to play hard at practice. You really had to teach him. He's one of those guys who didn't really learn a lot. And then what did we have last year? I don't know the playbook. So at the end of the day, send a message, man. You can have a culture. But the problem we have is that you have to set it from the very top. The top has... If I'm an owner, I want my general manager to have my philosophy. You can't be an owner and not have any kind of idea of what football is. And you got to have an idea of what kind of team that you want. Your GM should have that philosophy, and your GM then puts a head coach who, and you all share the same philosophy. You can swag it out how you want to do it, but you can't veer off from the philosophy and the culture that you want. That's why I'm looking forward to Joe Judge to see if he's really about that life, because – he's got his hands full now. This is his first scandal. How is he going to handle this? And there was another question. What was the other question, man?
You said the virtual workouts. Did you tackle that? A little bit, right?
Yeah. I mean, virtual workouts are good. Honestly, there's a lot of guys. Like, I've been looking at the videos on Giants.com and seeing guys talking about it. A lot of guys actually prefer the virtual workouts and actually looking at studying the playbook in a classroom type setting, because you get to learn the terminology a little bit better. You get to spend more time studying what your job is than, hey, we're going to spend an hour, 2 hours in class, and then now we're going to go on the field and you got to implement it. You have a lot of time to study. So really, I'm at this level of athletics, I'm not too worried about the physical aspect as I am the mental aspect. And if they can learn better at this level, you're going to get some guys who are more hands-on guys who aren't going to learn that way. But I think a majority of the guys are enjoying learning this way. But then, you know, they feel it again back out on the field. And as far as, the defensive coordinator thing, why do people blame defensive coordinators? I think ultimately it's the easy scapegoat, right? You got to go. You know, if you had a great offense last year and then the corner comes up and he lays an egg, it's very rare that you look at the personnel, but I think you need to look at the personnel. Like the next year, we had some key changes that were missing in 2012 on that Giants defense than we had in 2011. One of the biggest ones was Shaheen, right? We got Justin Tuck who stepped in, and it was JPP who was still kind of green. So there was a learning situation that was going on there. But a lot of the times, you know, the coordinator is an easy target because he's it's like in the army. You got the frontline guys, and then you got, you know, the main guys in the office. And so frontline guys get hit first, man. And the frontline guys usually are coordinators. So that's why they're going to get the blame for it. But at the same time, coordinators are also the hottest guys to become head coaches. So you live and die with the poison you choose. You could be a dope coordinator 1 year, next year you're the head coach somewhere. So it goes both ways, you know what I mean? There's a way up the ladder, to skyrocket if you're a dope coordinator. And the side effect is, the consequence is, if you're a dope coordinator 1 year, and the next year you guys kind of stink, you're going to catch the blame for it, and they're going to want to see you improve it. Connections to your players is everything, man. And again, let's start from the top. What do I want to see from my team? To this moment, we still don't got an identity as the New York Giants. That's what I'm waiting for. And I'll say this quick. I know I'm running on, man, and I apologize. I watched the 2007 divisional playoff game, right? And it was against the Cowboys. And I was looking at that defense. And it was majority of veterans in the front seven, Mitchell, Pierce, then they threw in Reggie Tolbert up in there. We had Strahan and OC. So it was just a lot of leaders on that defense. But the one thing that I saw and I remember very clearly was back then, even if a team scored, like in that divisional playoff game, I didn't worry because I believed in the defense. Right now, I don't believe, and that's what's missing. I don't have the comfort of my team, And I don't believe that they can overcome because they haven't shown that at all. They haven't shown a gel unit. They only show individual sparks. And that's not going to get it in the NFL. You got to be a unit. That's all I got, man.
Shout out to Manny Dogs, Blitz underscore FOG on the gram, man. Manny, thank you very much. Let's go to Benny, man. Benny, what's going on? We're talking defensive coordinators, in particular, Patrick Graham. What's your thoughts on Patrick Graham? What kind of adjustments you want to see from Patrick Graham? Definition of lit had the question as far as do you feel bamboozled? And, Carl, when we get back around to you, if you could give us your defensive coordinator, I think I missed that. We'll go back to him. We'll get to you, your favorite one. But, Benny, Bleed Blue Show, Big Blue Roundtable, what's your thoughts on Patrick Graham? Do you feel bamboozled? What's your thoughts on virtual workouts?
Well, my first opinion, first and foremost, is going to come from some people might call me biased, but I'm a big believer in Big Blue every year. I believe in the organization and the franchise, and some people try to drag the Maras into it and everything, but I believe that they're above my pay grade, and every year they're doing what they can to make things right. So to start with that, by bringing in Joe Judge, who obviously hired Patrick. Just listening to Joe, I'm gonna sidetrack here, just listening to Joe and his belief in what he's gonna bring back to New York, and just that he's gonna bring back, you know, some uphill battle, downhill battle football. I love that, and the fact that he's worked with Patrick over there in New England, and now he's bringing him over. This question makes me focus more on Joe Judge because of the fact that he's brought in Patrick Graham, and we've seen what Patrick Graham's done over there. He's bringing in people that us Giants fans don't like, the clapper, Jason Garrett. But if you look at his success as a coach and then him over there as a coordinator before that time, wow, what a great ad. He's not in charge. He's just someone to add to that part of it. And he just keeps adding all these wonderful people like Patrick Graham. So I don't think I'm being bamboozled. But then again, I trust in the system. And every year, I don't care if we were 1-15 last year. I watch the draft. I don't always agree with every pick. But I watch training camps. I watch everything that goes on. And, man, I think the Giants, and this is not being biased, everything I've watched this year, this is the best feeling year I've had in a long time about how things are going to play out. I think everybody's going to be caught off guard because, yeah, people will talk about how Daniel Jones fumbled this ball a lot. Well, you know what? Carson Wentz fumbled it 2 times less than him, and they don't consider him a fumble risk, but this rookie – and, you know, Carson Wentz has been in the league for 4 years. This rookie comes in, and he fumbles it a lot. Yeah, that was his biggest thing. And, boy, I tell you what, my heart dropped every time he did it. But he only did it 2 more times than Carson Wentz. But, yet he's being considered a risk at holding on to the ball as a rookie. When Carson Wentz did it, I think, 16 times. Daniel Jones did it 18 times. And I know your question was all about Patrick Graham, but yeah, that's where that's led me to is there's your answer. I don't think we're being bamboozled. Heck, I think with the talent that we've brought in as coaching, with Daniel Jones doing what he did, he had like a 66% passer rating, completion rating. That's amazing for a rookie. And like I said, I know it's off track of your question there, but everybody's going to be surprised. The Giants, I think they're coming with a big bang this year. And then the way they did draft with their focusing on the offensive line, I like how they threw in Jimenez. And they're going to protect Patrick Jones, Daniel Jones, which I think they should have done for Eli a few years ago. Eli got kind of robbed in his last 5-6 years of playing because they didn't focus on it. But I think that they did what they needed to this year. And hopefully this whole DeAndre Baker thing whew, at first I was upset. You know, I was right there and watched them get drafted, and I thought, man, why would you throw your career away? But I'm only as knowledgeable as what I hear on the news, but it sounds like the guy that they have a picture of there has tattoos on his arms, DeAndre Baker don't. There's a good chance that he really wasn't part of that. Does it hurt his career? Yeah, well, obviously it will, but I'm hoping that this pans out and he really wasn't a part of what everybody says, but I'll leave it there.
Now, do you have a question for everybody here on the roundtable for Lit, Carl, Manny, myself? You have a question related. Oh, by the way, give us your favorite defensive coordinator in the history of the Giants, if you don't mind. If you have any other questions.
Well, you're going to find this crazy. I still find it to be Steve Spagnuolo. Just going back to Eli's younger years, let's go back to like 2006. Even while Tiki Barber was still on the team, the Giants were not the greatest team around. And then following back into 2007 when they made their Super Bowl run, if you watch, and it's kind of hard to give Steve Spagnuolo all the credit when you got someone like Michael Strahan on the edge for you. I like Steve Spagnuolo. And I know after leaving the Giants, he had a rough career. For a moment there, you know, I think he went over to the Rams and gave them one of their worst records. I think he ran around, went over what was it, to the Saints, and then that was all back when Sean Payton, I think that, you know, they had their little scandals going on. He was removed, so he wasn't there to guide Steve Spagnuolo. So they say that, you know, they missed the playoffs for the first time in so long, blah, blah, blah. Then he went to the I can't remember where he went after that. But then you remember, he comes back to the Giants. I think it was the 2015 season, and it wasn't a great season. But then he comes in 2016, and, the Giants finished 11-5. But I like Steve Spagnuolo. Like I said, he doesn't have the greatest track record if you watch where he's went and what he's done. But with the Giants, he did well. And if you've ever noticed in history, there's quarterbacks that suck where they are, and then all of a sudden they go to a new team, and all of a sudden life comes about. He just seemed to click with us. I'm going to go with Steve Spagnuolo.
All right, shoot. Shout out to Benny, man. Thank you very much, man. We're going to go around and get back to you before we get off of here. And I'm going to answer the question from Lit. Do I feel bamboozled? That is a very good question, Lit. I mean, man, this is about Dave Gettleman, of course. Dave Gettleman has got to own that because, like Benny said, the night of the draft, that was the Nashville draft, basically moving up in the draft to go get him. And whether you did your homework or you did not do your homework, you went up slots to go get who you thought was going to be valued within the organization. And we know that DeAndre Baker struggled. A lot of us do believe on this platform that it could be improved on the field, but the off-the-field stuff is just really not a good look. It's just the totality of it is just – it's just amazing since the time coming onto the Giants, the bad play, the first 5-6 weeks into the year, the struggles, and then off the field, what is this is where Gettleman has got the answer. And I think depending on which stakeholder, which Giant fan you talk to, they don't even trust what Gettleman has got to say. Let me focus to Patrick Graham, and we're going to go back to Lit. The fascination of – oh, yeah, to Carl. I was going to say this, the fascination of coordinators. I think even if there is a football season and we have our post games like we normally do, I'm going to implement that. I thought about that over, like, let's say the last year or two. If the Giants win or lose, how do we issue blame as far as through the coaches? Who gets most of the credit? We're going to put like a percentage on each game and really look at it through that lens. But I understand what you're saying as far as who gets the blame, who gets the credit when things go well, bad, so on and so forth. But let me get to Patrick Graham real quick. I'm glad that Lit is behind me next in the order because Patrick Graham, this is how I look at it, man. He made a unilateral move. He went from defensive coordinator from the Dolphins to defensive coordinator to the Giants. Now, the question is, why would he do that? And I think there's a theory, a philosophy behind that. I'm going to say this. The Joe Judge connection, obviously, is on record. That's what Benny said. No doubt that is definitely true. It has a lot to do with it. Do I think being a defensive coordinator is probably a little bit more prominent than a defensive coordinator in Miami? Probably, yeah. At the end of the day, it's one of 32 defensive coordinators. Usually the head coach job is the hierarchy of all hierarchies as far as on the field, game managing, if you're not players. But this is where I think Patrick Graham made the unilateral move, and this is not good news because obviously if you watch the Giant games, I mean, I want to go back to Manny Dawgs and Carl as well and get their thoughts on my opinion when I'm about to say this. Is we all saw the game versus Miami at home. Remember they had the back-to-back games versus the Jets and the Giants at the Meadowlands or at MetLife. And defensively, let's call it for what it is. Patrick Graham didn't really have a very good, talented defense. So you only could work with what you could. The one game I do like that he did play, you know, he had a couple of games. The one they had played in Indianapolis in November, and then there was the game versus the Eagles after Thanksgiving. I know they gave up a lot of points in that game, but there were some good stops in that game to keep that offensive alive for the Miami Dolphins. But the first seven games of their season, I mean, they got destroyed opening day versus Lamar Jackson. I mean, put up 59. Remember, they could not stop scoring. Then, of course, they gave up 43 to the Patriots the very next week at home, back-to-back home games. You're literally talking well over 100 points at home in two games, and they got smoked in Dallas, right? So I say all this to say is I think Patrick Graham kind of looked at it. He was probably on the hot seat in Miami, and he's starting over in New York with a clean slate. His best game, obviously, was the game they played at New England, the last game of the year, and they shocked everybody, and they beat the Patriots at home. That's why the Patriots ended up playing the first week of the playoffs and ended up getting eliminated by Tennessee. But it's kind of twofold. The type of adjustments I would like to see him versus Betcher, obviously, I want to see him utilize – the linebackers and especially in the B gaps with our nose tackles to make plays. And I think this is where Ryan Connolly comes in. I heard Manny Dawgs kind of alluded to that. That's something Betcher probably lost because Connolly got hurt of the year early in the season. And they kind of didn't really had nothing outside of David Mayo. But if there's any adjustments I do want to see, and this is all pending if Golden comes back, and that was kind of their sack guy get off the quarterback. I definitely want to see more accurate plays, like Carl said, pretty much tackles off the edge, gang tackles. I want to see that more. I want to see explosion. The tackles in the middle, I'm cool with. Manny Dawgs to what he said as far as the hybrid defense on the 5-2. I'm cool with the 5-2 because you do have the corners depth, and outside of DeAndre Baker, of course, because now that kind of changes my perspective. But I do want to see more downhill with our front seven. That is an element I want to see. Problem is, do I think we have the personnel within our own division to go up against that? I think we can surprise a little bit of some teams. I think we can. But I want to go back to definition of lit. We answered your question. Oh, my favorite coordinator. I'm gonna have to say Belichick, but I gotta put the caveat. My favorite game out of all the defensive coordinators. Now this goes to this. We're talking Tim Lewis. We're talking Parcells. We're talking Schottenheimer in the 70s. Who else was it? Bill Sheridan was terrible. Who else was it? Perry Few was terrible. Even though he won the Super Bowl, he was terrible. My favorite defensive coordinator moment was the 41-0 NFC Championship game, stopping the Vikings offense at Giant Stadium. I remember everybody thought the Vikings were going to kill us, and they had the high-powered offense, and we held them to a goose egg. And that was John Fox. And then we all know the rest is history. We go to Tampa and we get smoked by the Ravens in the Super Bowl. But my favorite defensive coordinator moment is definitely John Fox. I loved it, and that's why he ended up getting the head coaching job in Carolina. But definition of lit, you heard everybody's answers to your question. I am kind of apprehensive or on the fence about Patrick Graham because I think this lateral move, because I think he looked at last game versus in New England, and it was kind of almost a postponement to his hot seat because he had a terrible season. Not his fault necessarily because he's not the general manager. He doesn't put the roster together. But those games were bad to look at and also just putting up a record number of points within the first 4 weeks. But definition of list, you have anything else? You have any questions for anybody else, Carl, Manny, Vinny, so on and so forth? If you give us about 2 to 3 minutes because I know we're going to wrap up soon.
Hey, so Steve, listen, check this out. You know, some people are excited about Patrick Graham, but if you remember last year in our pick-ems, we were just trashing Patrick Graham in the defense. Now we're all nut-hugging him because he's the DC of the New York Football Giants. That, to me, just seems, you know, kind of contradictory. I am very skeptical about him. He had some flashes from what he had, what he worked with in Miami, but are we expecting a miracle or are we expecting a unilateral move, like you said, to come from Miami to New York Giants in a unilateral move? He came in basically on the word of trust, obviously. Now, I kind of want to segue into this. I think that anybody that comes from the New England Patriots lineage has a lot to prove because the odds are against them. They have not been successful in the league except for maybe one coach. So to say that, you know, we are going to, you know, get results, respect, from Joe Judge. I think Joe Judge needs to earn, you know, he doesn't have that cachet of credit just yet. Carl's used that term before, but I don't think the guy, even Patrick Graham, has earned anything. They have to earn it for us to respect them. Yes, they might be the coach, the defensive coordinator, but what have they done except come from the Bill Belichick tree, which has not been successful upon leaving the Bill Belichick tree? As far as I just wanted to kind of clarify, Steve, and then I'm going to sign off. Just wanted to clarify to Vinny over there. I wasn't saying bamboozled. What I meant was, forget David Gettleman. If you are a donor, a sponsor, a philanthropist, and you give to the New York Giants, and you were told, hey, we're getting rid of all these players, rest assured, it's because they got bad characters. To wake up that morning and see that ESPN blitz, you're like, come on, really? What's going on? I thought we got rid of all of the bad characters, the cancers, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. I don't want to be a philanthropist and wake up to this crap. That's all I was stressing. It has nothing to do with the general manager, the players, the coaches, whatever. This is more of like at the top upper echelon of a New York Football Giants lineage. Hey, this is a good show, man. I'm looking forward to hearing what Carl, Manny, Goggs, and Vinny has to say before we wrap this up. I'll talk to you later, Steve.
Thank you for definition of lit, man, on his final thoughts. Carl, let's get your final thoughts as well. Well, Carl, let me get you. Did you say he's a defensive coordinator? I think I missed that before. You had a favorite one?
You know, actually, I didn't. Actually, I didn't. You know, I wanted to eliminate Belichick from the discussion because I thought that was going to be everyone's sort of top pick, so I wanted to pick somebody else. And so I wanted to pick someone that, you know, at least – from the time that I had an intelligent mind about watching football, which kind of happened right when I was in high school. So for that standpoint, John Fox was my personal favorite. You know, if you look back at some of those teams in the late 90s, you know, the defense really was the leader of the team. I mean, they were basically, you know, the offense, you know, did what they could. They were not a very talented group at all. But, you know, each and every week, you could count on the defense to at least give you a high quality performance. They may not have been able to close the deal a lot of times, you know. And I think back to one game that sticks out. You had mentioned the 41-0 game to Minnesota. I'll just go back a few years before that, and the game that sticks out to me still is the. Remember the game that they played against Minnesota in the playoffs in '97. When they had, I think it was a 16-0 halftime lead, and I think they were up by 9 with 2 minutes to go, and they couldn't hold the lead, and they lost the game at home. You know, that was, you know, that was sort of like emblematic of Giant football from like 1992 to about 2005-ish, right around that period. Like that moment right there, that was sort of a symbolization. Like they could give you a good performance for X amount of time, but those little gaps, you know, those little lapses where, you know, things just didn't seem to go right. But Fox was my personal favorite.
Any final thoughts from you, Carl, on the on this episode of the Sense of Coordinates virtual workouts? Anything else you'd like to add?
I think virtual workouts are pointless. I just, you know what, just try. I'm sorry. I think there's a lot of micromanaging that's going on here. You know, give me a list of things that you want me to have done. I'll get them done for you. If you trust me, I'll get them done for you. I don't need to have, you know, 50 guys on a Zoom call, and I have the coach saying, hey, I can tell by the guy's eyes whether or not he's paying attention. I'm sorry. That's just me. You know, I'm a person where if you give me a list of tasks, I'll knock it out for you, and we can keep it moving. Now, unfortunately, you know, everybody has their own different way of – some people need to be prodded. Some people need to, you know, need to have a kick in the ass. Some people are self-starters. So, they're, you know, it goes a lot of different ways. But, you know, if it was up to me, do we need virtual meetings? I don't think so.
All right, that is Carl from Big Blue Chicago, man, BlueBlueChicago.com, man. Thank you very much, Carl. I remember that game in 97. I was in high school. And you're right, we were up in that game like 16-0. That was Fossil's first year, if I'm not mistaken. That may have been his first year. And that's when Cunningham had went over there with Dennis Green. That's when they started to get things rolling. And then Robert Smith had a hell of a year. The running back out of Ohio State. Man, I want to bring back those games, man. I'm trying to forget about that stuff. Manny Dogs. I ain't trying to go back down that road. That's when Giant Stadium used to rock, though. I'll give it that. I miss that type of home field, though. I do miss that. Manny Dogs, final thought.
Yes, your word. I definitely miss. Yeah, and this is how bad it's been for me, bro. I've been watching old YouTube videos. I watched the 86 NFC Championship game. I've been watching. I watched the 91, and I'm just like, listen to this crowd, bro. Yo, I miss the days where you booed the opponent when they came on the field. You booed the shit out of them. When they did anything right, you booed them. You made the most noise possible when they were on the field trying to make a snap. And you kind of toned it down when our offense. I miss those days, those rabid fans. And I think that players are missing out on that as well. To make my last point, man, I said earlier what was missing, and you had touched on it too. When I was watching that 2017 and it had some veterans on there, they gang tackled, man. They gang tackled, and they were playing against Marion Barber.
Yeah.
He was having an amazing game. He was having an amazing game. And you know what, though? Every time, there was one guy that met him every time in a hole, and it was Kavika Mitchell. And that kid is underrated. He blamed that boy over and over and over again. And it got to a point where once he started doing it, then the gang tackle started coming. And there was a time where if you were still up, there was going to be a safety or a linebacker coming to clean your clock. And so that's what I miss. But again, that goes league-wide. Guys, tackling is being taught bad. There's a lot of things that need to be fixed. But I, for one, I'm looking forward to this year. I'm looking forward to what Joe Judge brings to the table. I'm hoping he sticks to his word. Because if he can bring hard-nosed, blue-collar football back to New York, I think the fans and the blue-collar, hardcore fan will be back in those stands too, man. Blee blue.
Blee blue, blitz underscore FOG, man, on the gram. Shout-outs to Manny Dogs, man. Thank you very much, man. Let's go to Benny, man. Benny, get your final thoughts, man, on this episode, talking with the Big Blue fans, man.
All right, cool. Well, yeah, I got a couple thoughts. You'll find out about me. I'll start five stories and finish one, but I'll wrap this up based on some of the last things I heard. I do want to let you know, Steve, I consider myself Idaho's number one Giants fan, and I go by G-Man Ben, my brother. So, anyway.
All right.
anyway, so back to I can't remember who it was earlier. It might have been Carl. He was asking why playing the defensive coordinators, and I put a lot of thought into that, and I think I could wrap that up in simple terms, in my opinion. So Yeah, you get all these players from college, the draft, however you get them put on teams. Now, let's remove the logos of a team. Yeah, people could say this team's better, that team's better. Take away the logos, and they are all just amazing players that just found their way into this amazing league we call the NFL. Now, here's the thing. On each team, there is someone that has to get these players to perform like they have been expected to and in order. And so a simple, why blame the coordinator? Well, things didn't go the way as planned. The team didn't win or do what they were supposed to do. We know these are great players. It's your fault because you were supposed to coordinate it. And I think that's I think that's kind of the best way to put that about defensive coordinators. I heard Gettleman get brought up again. You know, I was watching something yesterday. I can't remember the guy that was talking about it, but it went into the 2013 through 2017 season on all teams, and he was talking about some teams had more picks, some had less, but based off the picks they had and the percentage of the players that were still playing, not whether they were with the same team or with another team, the number one team from 2013 from 2017 to have all their draft picks still playing in the league was the Carolina Panthers, which Gettleman was in charge of. So 75% of the people that Gettleman was in charge of drafting by the end of 2017 from 2013 were still playing in the league. Funny thing about that, the Giants were seventh on that list, meaning a lot of their players were still playing, and they were only at like 59 or 56 or something. So I think Gettleman's got an eye for players. Whether it stays with his team or not, that was something that caught my eye yesterday. And then one of the guys was talking about Joe Judge, you know, and he's got to earn that. Well, yeah, anybody that gets a position is supposed to earn that. But I can tell you, when I listened to Pat Shurmur talk, oh, I was hoping he was good, and I was trusting in the system like I tell you guys I do. Oh, boy, that, you know, okay, let's see what you can do. And before him, the gentleman from Green Bay, slipped my mind right now, he got fired. But anyway, he didn't seem to bamboozle me, or he didn't seem to flash at me, or bamboozle is the wrong word. He did not seem to inspire me. But I thought, oh, it's Ben McAdoo. And I thought, he helped. I'm always optimistic. And I'm like, oh, he helped out Aaron Rodgers and this and that, blah, blah, blah. But during the speech, I was just like, yeah, trust in that. But I can tell you what, when I heard Joe Judge give his speech, it was confident. And it wasn't confident like I'm reading this and I've studied this speech a million times. It was like, wow, I believe in you. And so going back to what do we think about bringing on Patrick Graham, I'm going back to the Joe Judge. He sold me. If he was a car salesman, he sold me. If it wasn't pure confidence. And the funny thing is, as calm as he was during his speech, I thought, wow, this guy, wow, he sounds like he means business. He sounds like he is bringing football back to the New York football Giants. And every little bit of everything that he's done, bringing on some of the coaches that we've talked about and all that, I'm like, I trust this. And I don't think I could have said that about Pat Shurmur or Ben McAdoo or any of that. And I just want to say, man, I think that with Giants have big things to come. I don't think we're just in the rebuilding stage with some of the moves they made. I'm not saying these rookies are going to get out there and jump on the field right away. But if you watch it, football is a whole new breed compared to 10, 15 years ago, when some of these rookies are coming out and starting. And these people saying we're just going to go 5-11 again, 6-10. I honestly believe with Joe Judge in charge, the coaches he's brought in, the players we drafted, even with the DeAndre Baker stuff going on, I'm glad that we're removing all that, and the guy said, I thought we weeded that out. Well, nobody's perfect, but who's to say he's not innocent? Who knows? I don't know. Anyway, I think everybody's going to be surprised. A minimum of 8-8 next year, plus. And I just want to finish that off with one guy said, we're talking about defensive coordinators, and he went with John Fox. Because he thought everybody would say Belichick. Well, I agree with that. When I started talking about Steve Spagnuolo, I was thinking about Belichick. And, boy, if he hadn't lost Brady and some of the group he has as a Giants fan, it would have been tough to meet them in a Super Bowl again, because I think karma has its way. Belichick got 2 rings from the Giants. He owed us 2. And that's just more of a joke.
Right.
But anyway, appreciate it.
All right, man. Shout out to Benny, man. Thank you, Benny, man. We're out of time, man. We got to shut it down. For Definition of Lit, Big Blue of Arizona, shout out to Carl, Big Blue Chicago, Manny Dogs, Benny, myself. We'll be back in 2 weeks, 2 Thursdays from now. We're going to tackle with Jason Garrett. We're going to look at the same thing from the offensive perspective with the coordinators. You guys enjoy y'all holiday weekend. We'll be back in 2 weeks for the football. If you're in for the hockey, baseball, basketball, we'll be back next week, man. Sangre Azul, ladies and gentlemen, bleed blue.
Can you dig it? Can you dig it? Can you dig it?
Bleep bloop, 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 bleep bloop.